You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about a friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. A guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
Writing a market is so much easier because you have it's so much easier to get traction. It's so much people go, oh, yeah. I understand what something is. If people understand what something is, they can get it. Like if you saw a weird box in the grocery store with pancake mix, you go, okay, it's pancake mix. Mm. But if it's something weird that says, you know, something you don't understand with some different language, like, what is this thing? Like you're not going to bring it home and eat it.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that gets into the meat of things. With me today is Delicious Meats, or Alex Karna. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I've got my coffee. Do not isekai me before I've had my coffee.
Why not?
Yeah, I'll be very, very, very out of it. I might die at level one if you do that. So thanks for having me, Max. I'm happy we get a chance to do this. I was very stoked when I got a chance. I was like, oh, cool. You know who I am? Oh, great. Cool.
Yeah.
Let's
I have people who were like, you got to invite this dude. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll do that. Sure.
Nice.
I think it was on the order of Discord, but also like my my little circle of friends that were like, yeah, you got to get this guy.
It's very weird to me to like have people know who I am because I only got on the website in like November. You know, it's just very.
It's very rare for me to know who like people who like to know who I am. Mm-hmm. I still whenever I send out an email or a Discord message, usually I like preface it like, "Hey, this is the podcast. This is what I'm doing." And like by now, people are like, "I know this. Why are you telling me that?" I'm like, "I'm sorry," but yeah, cool. Nice, and hi and welcome. We were talking about your books earlier, and we even cut the pre-show Patreon content short a little bit, and we'll tag it on at the end.
Okay.
Because I really wanted to talk to you about your two books. We've already gotten your evil origin story out of the way before the podcast on YouTube started.
Though actually, you know, if you want to know the real origin story, I actually owe the fact that I write to Anne Rice.
Anne Rice. Okay.
Yeah. I saw what she did. And I was like, if she can write, I can write.
There's two different kinds of authors. Mm-hmm. Only two. Mm-hmm. And one writes out of the goodness of their heart. They go like, I really want to tell people this story. This story has to be heard. I really want people to like hear this story. Mm-hmm. And the other kind of author writes out of spite. They're like, this gets published. Seriously? I'm going to show them what a good book looks like. And then, of course, it's way harder than people think. But
I was an idiot. Yeah, I was dumb. I actually was thinking about this morning. I was thinking about because my main gripe at the time was that, oh, my God, she changed the character of Louis and how he is and how his demeanor is. Oh God. And that was how I looked at it when I was starting, like when I was like 17, 16. Mm-hmm. And then now, as a guy in his 30s, I'm looking at it, I go, it makes sense. She followed reader feedback. She went with a thing that people actually liked and had a career. I'm like, that is smart. It's not, it's listening to feedback. It's an intelligent thing to do. I went, okay, how I feel about this is very different, you know, 20 years later, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah. Don't get me started. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that we are on Railroad and that we can actually incorporate all this feedback. Like, again,
being able to iterate is amazing.
Yeah. My friends tell me I should stop joking about this, but like when people tell me like Torchbearer is trash, you should totally stop writing it. I'm like, okay, I will. I took a lot of feedback and yeah. So actually tell me why and how your story. So start off with Soul Guardian and then Marine.
Okay, yeah, Soul Guardian. I think both of them have this weird common thread because they both started with a picture I saw online. Soul Guardian started with a picture of, I think I started writing this, 2012? A long time ago. And I never had any place to post it before Railroad. So I was very enthused to find a home here, even if it's not, you know, strictly on genre, because it's a slice of life, romantic comedy, you know, urban fantasy, angels and demons kind of thing. Very cool. Good omensy. And I saw this picture and it was an artist and had a little girl in a, making a little pentagram. And she's, you know, drawing with a stick. And there's a demon next to her. And it says, if you ever need anything, just call. So you knew cool. how to call me. Yeah. And then the premise from there was, hey, little girl, summons a demon to open a jar of tomato sauce. So I wrote a little short story about a girl who had been, you know, who had like, you know, a demon who could help her out. And like the idea was, okay, this person's been sacrificed by, you know, her family and the demon doesn't want to sacrifice. So, you know, becomes the person's daughter. And that became Soul Guardian. And that kind of evolved from there. And who I was when I started writing the book in 2012 versus who I am now is very different. But I have circled back to that feeling of, because I was maybe, I don't know, I was like, don't make me do math. I was like 22, 24 at the time when I started writing it. And like, I was very dissatisfied with my career. I'd been with the same company for like 5-6 years, hadn't pivoted into sales yet. I still worked in food and training. And I was very unsatisfied. And that's kind of, I channeled that into the book. And then when I came back to it, it's as a man in his 30s, kind of looking at, you know, the benefits and the things I've done and going, being a little wanting more and finding out what I want and focusing on what I want. And it's weird how you kind of go full circle.
Cool. All right. So tell me more about the story. We know the premise, right? And I think right out of the gate, like you hit like, I think like 2,500 followers or something on Railroad.
I don't really promote that book much. I don't do many shouts or promotional stuff. That's all kind of just organic views, like people popping on it, glomming on it, liking it. I'm sure if I posted more and had more time, I could write more of it. But yeah, no, it's doing really well. I was the feedback when I first started was, oh my God, you're writing a romantic comedy on Railroad. You hate success. I'm like, I'm going to have the success I can with the talent I got and hope for the best. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's fine. I'm not required to succeed all the time, you know?
Like that attitude. It's nice.
Yeah. I mean, think about all the times we failed before we had one bit of success. How many times we failed before we found that one job? And look at that ratio. You've got, let's say, you know, you post 6 stories and hit it good on one. You know, it's you know, only 1 out of 6 succeeded. And now you're saying you have to be successful every single time. You have to have that improvement of 100% success from 1 out of 6. That's not realistic.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely not.
It's
like, I mean, like the more you learn, obviously, like the easier it gets to like kind of find the market and write on market. I'm looking at Actus, for example, who really got everything that he really wanted. Like this sounds bad, but like he wrote everything that his soul really hung on, like Steamforged Sorcery, like a lot of steampunk and pirates. And then he started writing on market and he still loves it, right? So I think like
I love Rise of the Living Forge.
Yeah,
I read every chapter. I love that.
It's hot. It's hot.
So good. Soul Flame.
Yeah. I need to actually like go back to Railroad and start reading more. But like the thing is, I don't have the time. It's so hard right now. But yeah, I'll try and like get my time scheduling a little bit better.
So, I just love books. Yeah. I don't have the self-control to stay away from reading them. Like, oh, these cool little stories. Or like a cat can cut it in a fantasy world. I read through that, you know, and it like up to where it was in a day. Such a good book. Fun little one.
Oh my God. That sounds good.
Like, it's a kitty cat in a little RPG.
I actually have so many recommendations of people. Right, because I get like 4 or 5 recommendations every single podcast, and I'm getting hit by analysis paralysis. I still haven't read all the Skills 3. Like, I'm that far behind. This is who I am.
But on the other hand,
don't
I build
know
a nice shelf.
Who anyone is. That's the thing. I discovered. Okay, here's the funny thing. My mother is 70 years old. She's a little Cuban lady with gray hair, and she reads lit RPGs. And she discovered them before I did because she reads them on Kindle Unlimited.
Nice.
And it's this weird thing where it's like, I started saying, oh, she actually brought it up organically. And I mentioned, and I was like, wait, I just started writing those.
Nice.
Because she reads them all on Kindle Unlimited. So I didn't know who anyone was because I just kind of discovered the site in November. So I'm still like finding out, like, I didn't know who a lot of the big thing names were. And I was like, oh, I know that person on Discord. Okay, cool. Because a lot of people are very helpful and nice. And that is an amazing thing about this community.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love that too. The whole like rising tide. It's very, it's kind of unique in writing communities, I think. Like, you will find a lot of like amateur spaces, but as soon as it gets like a bit more commercial, it's sometimes it's a very doggy dog world. But
maybe it's because there's a bigger slice of the pie and because things are more transparent.
Yes. And also, it's just because like the readers are ravenous. There's never going to be enough. Mm-hmm. Right? Because like of the speed people read these things, and it's not
because they skim.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, if they want to do that, that's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt me. but All the Skills is definitely a book you should check out. It's
I need to read everything. Honorary. I will read all the things. Yeah. I just, I keep getting distracted by little piecemeal things.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, ooh, this, that, the other thing. What I really need to do is read more in Kindle Unlimited or start doing more Audible, start listening to that at the gym,
Oh, yeah. I do this like while I'm doing the laundry and dishes. I started listening to World of Chains recently. That's really good. Mm-hmm. That's the Sound Booth production, so that's pretty nice. Okay. So how about Magic Murder Cube Marine?
Magic Murder Cube Marine also started by looking at a meme online. It was the wizard pulling the shotgun out of his hat that says, I'm all out of spells, but I'm not out of shells. And I did manage to work that into the story at one point, so look out for that. I was in an author Discord and we're just shooting the breeze. We're just like, hey, what is this silly thing? Silly, dumb ideas. I'm like, what if it's just a gun wizard, shotgun sorcerer? What would we call this thing? Combat warlock and just making it bigger and dumber and stuff like that. And then I was like, this has legs. This sounds fun. Because I had four other things I was working on this thing where it was like an enemies to lover fantasy where it's like the evil dragon goes for a vacation because they're so tired, because they're tired of being the bad guy forever and falls in love with a paladin who's also a princess, that's a fun thing. I was writing that and I was working on some sci-fi because I have my current thing, Eden's Echo, which is now on there. I was working on all this stuff and then I have this thing where I try and keep a mind like water. I think David Allen is a big proponent of this, guy who wrote Getting Things Done. Whenever I have an idea, I write it down so it can get out of my head. If it's something I have to do, I write it down, then I write the next thing I have to do of it so it gets out of my head. And I was just writing any ideas I had for this thing. I'm like, you know what? I'll start writing a few chapters, see how it goes. And then I kind of extrapolate from there. Okay, like, what would this have to be like? Okay, this guy would have to have this, that, the other thing. Who do I want him to be? Okay, he should be larger than life. He should be a big guy. We should tell you right from the get-go that this guy is someone who is ridiculous. So people know what to expect. So people know not to expect reality. And then there's this thing, this meme called, it's called Things Skippy Is Not Allowed to Do. It is a meme from, a long time ago, it's a military meme of this guy called Skippy, who is like a E4 or something like that. And he does all these dumb things in the military. Like he's not allowed to go in skyclad. And there's a reference to that in the first one. He's not allowed to go into battle skyclad, even if he really wants to, or stuff like that. Or Skippy is no longer allowed to meet visiting generals. There's also, I learned later, something else that was similar called Old Man Henderson. Which is basically the idea of like this guy who's not actually a vet, but he's a crazy old guy in the Cthulhu mythos. And he was basically made to antagonize the DM or GM. And just kind of like it's that spirit of just dumb, over the top stuff and giving people what they want and making them happy and writing fun things and still having a character with soul and heart, and having other, side characters who are fun and have their own shtick. Because it's a very crazy world, but the characters are grounded. And that's the Terry Pratchett thing. You can have as crazy of a world as you want as long as people act like people and they're grounded. And that's something I try to do with this. Acting like people thing.
Mm-hmm. In the end, it always goes back to like writing characters, writing people.
Yeah.
It's what it is, yeah. Oh, cool.
Oh, so I don't think I even told you really the premise of it.
I mean, like, I was going to ask, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's about a guy, Francis III, died doing what he loved, killing everyone around him. It's about a guy who is this Marine, and he goes on a mission to save some people, and he's having a great old time of it until he explodes. And then he ends up in this fantasy world, and there's gods, and they're picking people as champions, kind of like this, you know, dodgeball game, and they get points and stuff like that. And there's a system which he annoys so much, becomes sentient. Because, technically. Yeah, just he's annoys the heck out of it because he's like, you know, he's a great guy, you know, and he's kind of exploring this world and it's reacting to him and things are changing, but he's a good guy. And he's seen a lot. He's a guy, you know, he's not the typical like 19-year-old. He's a dude. He's a combat vet who spent 19 years in the Marine Corps and how he interacts with stuff and him having fun with it. He's clever. He's not a brute. He's smart. He's just not a book learning guy.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There's like cool. So many cool ideas. Mm?
There's also some like world, some little kingdom building in there too. A lot of fun.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. What's the cube?
Oh, the glorious murder cube. Are you familiar with the meme? No?
No.
So, okay. The glorious murder cube was a meme a few years back, / KUBE. It was basically a design, exhibit. Mine is legally distinct, different dimensions, stuff like that. But it was basically a bunch of mashed up weapons and stuff. And it was supposed to be like a counter weapon, counter war thing. And it had the opposite effect. People who were like, you know, edgelords, gun nuts, whatever, were like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever. We want to make a pseudo religion to it. So the idea was, if there's mainstream religions, you know, in this place and the gods have stuff, maybe the meme gods are there. Maybe there's like Nyan Cat as a god somewhere. Or like Astley, the god of surprise music. You know, I'm going to give you up, never let you down. You know, the idea is like there's like the Greek pantheon, and then there's also like, the meme, you know,
pantheon.
Yeah, nice. The meme pantheon. Yeah, the memetic
ceiling
gods.
Cat.
Yeah, ceiling cat nice. Is watching you always.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I need to put that in. Oh my God. Thank you.
The guy from like the Yo Shit's on Fire, Shit's on Fire, yo dude. That's one.
Oh,
I love that one.
Oh,
so
it'd
much.
Be amazing. Yeah, right. Yeah. I like also yeah. Like there's a spaceman who is like, you know, Neil deGrasse Tyson. At some point, nice. I'm probably put in there just explaining things. Well, you see, Francis, and just having fun with it and putting stuff in that's consistent tone, but also having fun and going my own way.
You do realize you also have to like add a god of misfortune called Brian.
I'm not familiar. Bad Luck Brian?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Yeah. I'm old.
We're the same age. I think I'm older than you.
Maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm older than I look. Skosh. But yeah, I have a picture of myself that actually ages for me in the attic.
Very convenient. Let your cleaner drop that.
No, I also will not never set my attic on fire.
Yeah,
I heard that's like not very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely don't do it on stream because, you know, your portrait of Alex Gray just going there and be like, wow, that's a weird filter.
It's AI.
That's exactly. Yeah, I know. It really reveals this true form.
So
basically, people generally don't know why they succeeded. We can kind of back check it. It's like looking at a relationship and going, hey, why did this go sour? We can look at our fundamentals of, hey, did I love and cherish this person? Did I put their needs above my own? Did I was I someone good to be with? But you going, oh, it's because I didn't buy flowers that one time. And, you know, we give a lot of advice. And people give a lot of advice based off their experience. And they want to help. And they want to help you out. But we also have that writer bias, that author bias of like how we view the world. And that is one of the things that's so dangerous. Because as authors, we look at things like writing a book. we want to write the story, how to do it. And then there's the marketing aspect of that, which is different. And a lot of times, like if you show a cover to a bunch of authors, they're going to go, oh, wow, this is a really good cover. I get exactly what is going on here. It's, you know, a reference to this. It's a reference to that. It kind of calls back to this. But a reader might just go, oh, that's weird. This person's got cyber stuff in their brain.
Yeah.
And that is not a dig at them. It's their experience with the work. They don't have the context, or maybe they're just exploring this new thing and it might be for them. So you've got to kind of put something in a cover that makes it, it tells the reader what to expect, you know, different markets. Cause I know like TradPub in like Europe loves the more abstract covers, whereas TradPub here in the United States likes the more kind of actiony. This is what it says on the tin. Yeah. And so when you're getting feedback from writers, you're getting feedback from them often as writers, not as people for marketing. So it's that weird thing of people wanting to help and in having good intentions, but it might not be what you need at the time, which is why I always tell people, when you're getting advice, fact check it against your understanding of human beings and fact, well, it's called sanity check. Sanity check it against your knowledge of the fundamentals of writing, your knowledge of people and how they are, and your knowledge of the space. Because you have a chance to kind of go, okay, I'm running this through the bullshit checker. Because I have gotten a lot of advice where it's like, oh, no, this is perfect, but it might not apply to you. And that person who's responding to it might not know the entire situation. Yeah. Like the subject of having a subtitle for a story, right? It is very controversial. A lot of the larger ones, because they want clicks at any cost, will not have that. So someone clicks it and they like it or they don't. Some people, if they're writing off genre, for example, Soul Guardian, you know, it's, hey, it's slice of life. Romantic comedy, you know, stuff like that. That way people know what they're getting. So depends. Just different stuff.
I recently had a friend who got like some really, really bad advice. I
don't do chapter one ads ever.
That's someone said that. Yeah. But like, I mean, sometimes you can, like it's possible. It really gives, like it helps. I don't like personally.
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem with chapter one ads. Different readers do have a different way of following your story.
Yes.
Right? So some readers, they go to the front page, the front of the page, and they click follow, and then they start reading, and then, you know, they'll unfollow later. Some of them, you know, follow, and then it's that's kind of like their bookmark. They'll come back to it later. And some just start reading in chapter one. If you do a chapter one ad that links, that's an ad that links to just the first chapter instead of the front page, it is an unexpected behavior because a lot of people expect it to go to the page. And you are actually getting a bunch of people out of their flow of how they normally follow your story.
On the other hand, you're going to hit rising stars very, very easily. And
page views is different. Popular of the week, I get it. But you may be actually cutting yourself short because a lot of people will give bad ratings because the ad acted in an unexpected behavior and they feel kind of taken advantage of. And that is the trade-off because a lot of people don't care about the rating because they assume it's going to get tanked anyways, but believe in yourself, man. Believe in yourself and don't do, you know, crappy things.
As someone who's like Last Fiction, which is understandably not like the best it can be. This is why we wrote it. And no, the rewrite isn't online yet. Sorry, guys. Or maybe it is by the time this goes out. It's going to come out in like August.
I'd be interested to see the change.
Yeah, me too. I mean, like this is why I'm doing it. Like it's just an experiment. I've wrote it anyway. So why not just like, you know, do a re-release? But right now, like my fiction is like a 3.68 or 3.86 or something, right? And I'm like, Cadiz is not on market.
Well,
yeah. Also, like I have some like really deep issues there, like issues with agency and shit like that that I need to resolve. So I did that. I did resolve it, and maybe I'll see some nice increase in followers. But I had some people like give me advice, like, "Oh, don't relaunch. Don't do that. Just go straight to KU." I'm like, which publisher is going to take me with that rating?
Yeah.
So
Well, and also it's so you get a chance to feedback. Because I love Royal Road because we get feedback, and the things I would never think of. People go, because I'm a writer, you know, there's some things I would never think of. Like I had, for Soul Guardian, the original cover had a little hellhound puppy on it. And because it was romance, and people on Royal Road are used to, if it's on the front of the cover, it's the main character. They thought it was about a dog romance.
Oh, okay. I don't think that's allowed on Royal Road.
Exactly. Exactly. But I would never think of that in a million years. I'm thinking like a writer. Oh, hey, this is so cool. It's about a puppy. It's about, you know, life renewing and stuff like that, you know, and romance. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, no, there's a dog on the cover. It must be about romancing dogs. No, it's not. It's an enemies to lover. But I think a thing about that is it brings back to a piece of writing advice. People always say, you know, start with a bang. It's not about starting with a bang. It's about starting with something a reader enjoys. Giving them something that start with a smile, start with a thing that they will like that establishes the tone of the work so they know whether they're going to like it or not. Because whether you're on Royal Road and they just read the first chapter, or you're on Kindle Unlimited and they use the peek inside, that first thing is going to establish tone, give them something they like, they know that they like it or not. That's why I love prologues. It's it's a promise to the reader. I love prologues because it gives us a chance to give them a better idea of kind of the world, the tone, and stuff like that. And then I can go into the actual story. Yeah, but it doesn't have to start off so slow. And I read the original version of, you know, Torchbearer.
And oh my God, I'm so sorry.
There was a lot of cool stuff there, but it wasn't giving that grin at the get-go.
Yeah, absolutely not. Like my biggest issue in that book is, first of all, main character didn't have much agency. Right, it took her like until like the middle and like end of the book to actually get there. Which version did you read, like the 0.1 or the one that is up right now?
It would have been a few months ago, about 3 months ago.
Then it must have been the other one that's up right now. Yeah, and I'm not quite that sorry. Like the original one was like way worse. But
my first book was a noir cop thing about a literal German police dog. So. This uplift cyberpunk called Death by Chocolate.
I'm seeing a pattern here.
What?
Dogs.
Who doesn't love dogs? They're the best.
I'm a cat person.
Ah, that explains the litter box in the corner.
There is no litter box in the corner. You were not going to make me look. No. All right. So yeah, actually, thanks for reading it though. Like I have this bad habit of like putting myself down for writing, because. It's way easier to kind of like succeed low expectations than actually have like really high ones. But I don't think it's quite healthy. So
I think mental health is a big issue in the space. It always surprises me that people kind of compare themselves to other authors and get very down on themselves because they don't have their level of success. Like I was talking to Raven Stagger about something and there's like, well, I think he said, don't beat yourself up if you haven't reached this. Cause I've had this story here for like 3 months, 3 years. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it didn't even occur to me to compare. Yeah. Like it literally did not occur to me. Like, yeah, you got 12,000 followers. Great. I mean, you probably put in the work and spent time. It didn't even occur to me to compare. Cause I'm like, yeah, I'm new. Why would I like, I lucked into that because I'm just like, cool. I'm having the success I got. I'm not really comparing myself to other people. It's their thing is their thing. And they've probably put in a lot of work and had some little grace, you know, and a little good luck and been at the right place in the right time. Like it doesn't occur to me to like compare that or be mad because someone succeeded because it's like, great. They had success. I'm so happy for them. I'd love some of that, you know, but it's not a comparison because I just want everyone to be happy. You know, I'm like golden retriever, man. It's like,
I think you would like Waverly. I'm only comparing myself to others on my worst days, right? When things are chaotic and I'm not quite sure what's going on and I need some security, I kind of, you know, the human mind tricks itself into thinking that it is actually good at pattern recognition when it isn't, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's why you end up arguing with thunderstorms. Yeah.
Exactly, right? So you're looking at like whoever else wrote something like, what am I not doing? And this is exactly like the example you gave earlier with like, why did I buy a flowers on that Sunday, right? It doesn't matter. Like that being said though, sometimes comparison is good if you like to learn what works and what doesn't and then go back to your own stuff and actually work on yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I hope that by the time this is out, Torchbearer like is re-released and that I can proudly say like, hey, look, this actually worked because people have been telling me like, don't rewrite. Mm-hmm. And financially it's a bad decision for sure. but I kind of not doing this for the money. I got a good day job, so
yeah,
I'm just trying. I'm just having fun here.
I think there's something to be said for becoming a better writer and putting in the work. Like Eden's Echo originally had a major systemic issue that I didn't like the protagonist. I did not like this person. I wrote 80,000 words and then discovered I did not like this person. Right. I didn't like that this person was kind of whiny, that they didn't want to fight, that they didn't want to do the thing. And it didn't quite fit. It seemed like this person was digging their heels in being a brat. And I kind of knew why this person was this way. Yeah. But I hadn't told the reader. So
yes,
chapter one, a few little edits, and suddenly it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Exactly. This person is it's a cyberpunk. This person is bioengineered and has been hiding because they are bioengineered. And people want to kill people who are bioengineered because basically they're racist. And they're worried that it's going to dilute the gene pool. But they're also worried that these people are monsters, you know, because they're literally like, you know, it's sci-fi. You know, they were designed to basically survive in places where humans probably wouldn't, you know, and fight and keep going and keep going and keep going. And they had, you know, an advantage. So there were more of them. And then bad things happened. That's backstory. But because I made that one small change, you suddenly know, okay, she doesn't want to fight because she's afraid. It's like the person who has a father who's an alcoholic doesn't want to drink.
Yeah.
She's afraid she has that one beer. She's going to go psycho.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel that. I feel that a lot because I think to generalize this and not talk about myself too much, like.
Please do.
Torchbearer had the same issue. I hated Sam. Like, and until I actually realized, like, okay, cool. Like, she has, like, why is she all this angry? Why is she this weird? Like, it's because she lost all her friends, right?
Yeah, and also she's like this messiah person in that version I read, and all these people are reacting to this person, and then no one's listening to her, which, like you said about the agency thing. And I think by recognizing that and going, oh, okay. Like, I added a prologue to that same book, Eden's Echo, and that gave us this context of, hey, there's this larger world, and Eden does not know what's going on because she's naive. And then there's the dramatic irony of the reader knowing more than she does. And that made it much better.
Yeah. The point is, if you have an unsympathetic character that is like, you know, an asshole or whatever, your character can be the biggest asshole ever as long as they are believable.
And as long as they're entertaining.
Exactly. So, I mean, think about Dr. House, right? House MD. House is a very, very, very unsympathetic person. He's an asshole, but he's suffering. And it's quite clear why he's being such an asshole, because he's a cripple. And he's in constant pain, and he's like chucking Vicodin. And he's entertaining because his brand of like psychological violence is actually quite funny, right?
Well, he's also a Sherlock Holmes kind of guy.
Exactly, that's also capable, right?
He's a trope that we understand, like we have context for it, you know.
Yeah. Sherlock, like, actually, the hint is in the name, right? It's House Holmes, right? The entire thing is completely like it's a Sherlockiade, as you say in German literature analysis. Quite fun.
Where was I that had the Sherlock Holmes house? I think I was in Oslo, or might have been. It was Oslo or no, I think it was Malmo in Sweden. They have like a Sherlock Holmes house or something like that, or like a Sherlock Holmes inspired bar, like a mystery bar. It's like a little hole in the wall place. It's pretty cool. I have to look that up. Yeah, I was doing a little trip for some book research a while ago, and I was like, ah, this is a cool place.
Man, like, you're living the life. You're like, I'm going wherever I want to go. This is nice.
I was, you know, when I had the disposable income and then, you know, $40,000 pay cut. So I'm figuring it out. You know, it's, hey, like transitioning into doing more, having more time to write. Say, if I'm working 60 hours, my hair's falling out, you know, I don't want to have that heart attack by the time I'm 40. I would like to, you know, have a good, healthy career. So it's finding that balance, finding out what I want to do. Yeah. You know, so I'm in California. Rents here are ridiculous. I'm lucky to be in a spot where my rent isn't so ridiculous because I'm kind of grandfathered in at my apartment complex. But, you know, it's making it all work. Like, part of me wants to go off and, you know, buy a little piece of land somewhere and live in a solar powered trailer for the next 10 years. You know, and technically I could do that. But I don't know if I'd be happy. And it's about doing what makes you happy and finding ways to survive. Because I want to write. I want to write and have that time to do it. because I've got to finish Magic Murder Cube Marine. I've got to finish, you know, Soul Guardian. I've got to see what happens with Eden's Echo. Is that a series that's going to become a thing or not? Like, I have so many things I want to write, and I would love to have more time to write, but I work 60 hours a week. And then there's this, and there's managing that, and there's helping people because someone needs help with their blurb or someone needs help with their cover. Because there's so many people I know on Royal Road who have amazing books, and they can't do the marketing thing. Like, I have a friend who wrote, it was originally listed as Arcadia et Ego, which is like that famous painting, Here I Am in Arcadia. And it is now called Surviving Arcadia. And it's by Yarrow, a Scottish author. An amazing story. It's got survival. It's got lit RPG. It's got crafting and stuff like that. But if you looked at the cover and the title, you would never get that it was, you know, what it was about. And then, you know, helping them kind of do that. And it's also, it's my opinion, right? It's my opinion as a writer. I'm pretty good at getting people to help with their blurbs, to figure their stuff out. But they have to run it through their internal bullshit filter and see if that is what they want, how they want to represent their product, and if it makes sense for them, their audience, because you know your audience better than I do. You know your book better than I do.
But do I?
Yes, because I haven't read your new version. I will. I'll devour it in a day.
I think by now this should be out. I've just today, I've been doing some audio engineering. I've met a book narrator who was looking for work, and I like have been trying to like find her some work, and I was like, hey, why don't we just do like a trailer with like four torchbearer, like the first chapter
in a world that. One torchbearer will wake up to a world of machines
been having fun with reverb effects.
Well, this is the perfect mic for that, because this is a Sennheiser 416, which is the
she's narrating it. Not me.
Yeah. I've also got the random SM7B in
that one.
Yeah, I don't. I use the Shure because it's a shotgun mic, so I don't have it in the frame.
Yeah,
and that way I don't look like I'm in a Joe Rogan podcast.
hey! Look, if people pay me as much as they pay Joe Rogan, I'm fine.
I'd be happy. I'd be so happy. Yeah.
I'm hanging out, right? And I feel what you said about all this time and wanting to do something with it. I also actually, if I'm allowed to do my job, I'm an Agile coach. I love my job. I love organizing work systems and stuff like this. And like right now I'm in a new job, so I'm still like finding my way in the pecking order. Because as always, I do not sleep. I do not live. I do not lie. I am out. I do not sleep. I do not live. I do not die. I'm outside of the circle. I'm an eldritch being that no one knows what to do with.
You're a competent person with things outside of work who is not fitting the typical mold of, hey, let's, you know, work and then drink afterwards. Like, no, I got things outside of work, man.
Also, like, I'm not a manager, but I manage. I'm not an executive, but I do like system organization. And then people are always like, so you do scrum ceremonies, right? I'm like, oh, God damn it. Don't call them ceremonies. It makes it sound like I'm a cult. It's a thing. But anyway,
I feel that in my soul, because I used to be a Mr. Fix-It for a corporation. I'd go places where they weren't doing so well, get them back on track and, you know, get them to standard, get them. But a lot of that was just getting the resources they needed from the company.
Exactly.
Because often people want to do well, but maybe, hey, the machine they need to use has been broken since 1996. So the company needs to fork out, not really, but like, you know, but it's, they need the resources they need to thrive. And for me, I've led teams of 200 people. I've done that. And I love what I do. I love helping people out. I love giving a good standard of service and getting them a transparent process so they know what the heck they're getting, so they don't get, scalped by some poor dude. And that way they can, you know, be in a financial space where they can buy more stuff from me. It's like, hey, I'll, you know, help you out now, get you in a good space, you know, make sure you're successful, that way we can be successful together. But that is a very different viewpoint for the sales environment, because a lot of people told me, Alex, you're too nice, you're never going to succeed. Well, they're no longer with the company and I've got awards. But but now it's like, the pay cut. It's like, I can't afford to work there. It's like, I love you guys, but you know, you're going a direction I cannot follow.
That's a good point. I mean, the the thing, like with the new work, and you will find this too at some point, right? Because right now everything is kind of like running, because mm-hmm. as soon as you as a manager, if you give your people what they need and they're actually mm-hmm. having fun at work, you have very little to do unless you like are really looking for problems, right? But at the start, it is always a struggle, like because mm-hmm. you always need to know who's doing what, why, who's giving like really weird orders, and I also need to find out if that is actually something I do. But coming back to writing. Like you, I would love to just sit around like every morning, sit down, don't even start my other computer because this distracts me as hell. And once I'm distracted, I can't write no longer. Or I guess it's really hard to get into it writing. And just sit down at 8 in the morning or like 6, fuck it, 6, and just start writing and then pop up my 3,900 words before lunch and then just, you know, do something else. Like, I would love that. But as you, I also need to breathe and live and have a house.
Yeah, even the air in California is expensive, man. Because you got to filter it because we have so many freaking wildfires. One of the things I found for getting the time to write is writing on my phone. You know, you take Google Docs and then you go into Google Docs and you go and you basically delete the, tell it, uncheck the box for auto suggestions. That way it doesn't add weird stuff in there. Like basically modify it a little bit and then write there. So you always have a chance to write. Okay, I want to write. Boom. Yeah. I have a shortcut to this specific document on the front page of it. But that's also having things in place to enable yourself to do what you need to do.
Yeah. I just got distracted, right? And like my biggest enablement that I found was do not do anything else before you've written at least 100 words. That was my biggest enablement. Because once I'm in the 100 words, the 100 words become 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, right? But once I, like, if I start doing something else before I start writing, getting this initial, you know, initial expenditure is really hard.
But for me, it's just I will have an idea and I go, great. If my thing is, if you have an idea, write it down. If it's an idea works in the, because I have different documents. I have the documents, my work in progress, and then I have a separate document, another program, which is notes. And then at the bottom of the document, because I've discovered the wonder of headers on Google Docs, it's like Control-Alt-1. And then you have that index on the side. And because I name each chapter, I can then just scroll through. And at the very bottom, I have notes or things I have to do or like, you know, stuff that is relevant. That way it's always in my view and I can't forget about it. And that is my workflow for writing.
So wait, you were a plotter or a pantser?
I'm a bit of both. Pants. I go where the spirit takes me and what I. I had this conversation with Neon about this. About it. I went, oh, interesting. That's how you do. Because for me, it's like a branching path. So you start out with this idea of like who you want, what they're going to do and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then you have different ways to go, right? You can go this way, you go that way. And I always go, hey, I'm going to go in the path that is going to give the reader the most enjoyment, is going to give them a payoff, is going to be something they like. Because for serials, like we have this thing where it's not a finished book where someone just sit down and go, I know this thing's going to get finished and paid off because it's a full size book and I know how long it's going to be, right? Mm-hmm. In a serial, you don't. So you have to give them little things they like. Oh, this is a character I like. Oh, this is a joke I like. Oh, this is a thing I like. And feed into that. It's like a video game. You have to give them that feedback loop of a problem. They solve the problem. Something they enjoy. But I'm not clinical like that. I have basically a freshman high school education in English. I moved to another country at 15 and then graduated early and went to trade school. I would became a chef. Like I do not have high school high level English. I have English grammar workbooks for English as a second language.
nice. Right? That's good.
And I have this weird thing where I sometimes pop into Spanish because you know it happens. Especially go to the castle when I'm tired. But it's. It is one of those things where it's just like, yeah, you just got to do it. You got to write. And you got to find what works for you. Because for me, what works for me is just when I have an idea, write it on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. And like finding this process, like sometimes takes some time, right? And I also want to do like good at work. So this takes up time. And one thing I found that also really helps is like having a mental kind of like, almost like bricks that you can move around with priorities on them, right? Mm-hmm. So right now, my job is my highest priority. And then there's the podcast, and then there's writing, and then some other stuff, right? And it's okay to change these like day per day, like on a day by day basis.
I always talk about the importance of triage. hey, you know, what is the most important thing? They have that thing where it's basically, it's like, what is it that Square? So when I was, when I was in the corporate field, it's like urgent and important, you know, do it now, you know, urgent, but not important.
Oh, the one, not the SWOT, but like the Eisenhower matrix.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The corporation spent a lot of money training me how to train their people, and a lot of it stuck, and I kept it works. Great. Cause it's great. Cause I like helping people like get over the little humps there. Like, you know, you have writers and they're like, I can't get in my head. I don't know what to do. And I'm just like, cool. So let's go back to basics. You don't know whether you want to write this big, crazy battle right now, or you need to do something else. What is your reader going to most enjoy?
Yeah.
What would they go, ah, I love this. You know, what would make them happy? Because you want to make them happy, and it's a fundamental need of human beings to be of service. It's a fundamental need of human beings to be part of a community. And if you aren't sure what to do, do something nice for someone else. Do something kind. Do, even if that person, that someone else is you. You know, when in doubt, be kind. You will have, if you take that one piece of advice, you'll have a much better time of things. You know, if I'm in a horrible mood, and I know I'm in a horrible mood, I will go out of my way to do something nice for someone. I will get my coworker a coffee or bring in some fresh baked brownies, because I understand that, hey, I'm in a bad mood, but I shouldn't be a pill to other people.
Yeah.
So when in doubt, do something kind, especially, or nice for writing. If you don't know what to do in writing, don't know what to write, do something kind.
I have a wonderful adage about this.
Go for it.
I am a very selfish asshole, because whenever I feel bad, I help all the other people. Right? So that makes me feel better. But this is like, on one hand, it's dangerous, because there's this thing called in the agile coaching community, and it's called inflicting help.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Right? Which is like, I think it's an amazing word. Amazing phrase.
I haven't heard that forever.
You always have to like check, like, do they actually need help right now?
Yeah.
Do they want help? Or am I just helping because I'm nice? Also, one thing, a coach that I really adore, he's written lots of cool books. Jeff Watts is his name. He once said, helping other people feels good, so it's a selfish act. Conversely, it means accepting help is a selfless act.
Well, people want to be helping. People want to help.
Right. Exactly. And if you are in a position where you need help and you think, no, I can do this myself, blah, 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 you're depriving someone else of a chance of feeling good. So by accepting help, you can make other people feel good. And it's a good thing to accept help.
People which need is to help something, other people. Yeah. It's a sign of civilization. We knew civilization was kicking off because we found a buried bone of someone who healed from a femur fracture.
Yeah.
So that meant that person was being fed and being helped while they were their leg was broken. Yeah. And like they, what's that joke about medication? Oh, the person who invented this antidepressant would be very sad if you didn't accept their help. You know? Yeah. I think another thing is people are quite often like to talk instead of listen. There's something Alison Armstrong, I think, talks about the Meadow Report, which is where sometimes people are talking and, you know, it's just giving a report on, hey, what's going on in this. And that is just a sign of trust. And often if you're a problem solving person, we want to jump in with solutions instead of just listening. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. The advice monster. There's a book called The Coaching Habit.
Yeah.
Changed like a talk, like hear more, talk less, and change the way you lead forever or something. It's really, really good. And he talks about the advice monster that always like kind of drones out everything the other person is actually saying. And then it's like,
I'm like, what do you need from me in this moment? How can I help? Yeah. And just by asking people, because what they want might be different than what you think they want.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they just need to vent and they know. Or maybe that even helps them reach a conclusion. They go, you know, actually, Alex, I'm just venting. I know what I need to do. Great.
Yeah.
How can I support you?
The other question that I love, like this coaching for beginners, I guess, is the question, so what's the biggest problem here? And then just let them talk. And then when they're done, you're like, so what's the actual biggest problem here? And then you let them talk again. And then when they're done, like, oh, okay, I get you. But what's the actual problem here? And then they usually find out what's actually going on and you didn't even need to say anything. But you need to be able to get it. To be really good at active listening, right? So you need to be able to ask follow-up questions that don't put yourself into the answer. So questions like, I love powerful questions. Powerful questions like, what else about that? Or how was that for you? Or what else about X or Y? My favorite powerful question is, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because it elicits a response. No, I'm kidding, of course. But
yeah, see, I got to be careful because I'm like a 230-pound dude who's 6 foot tall, like in socks. So if I'm wearing work boots, I'm like 6'1" there, and like I have to be like not imposing on people because like if I get the deep voice sometimes, and my Batman, and you know I get asked a question, I got to be very careful and with how I present myself because some people can feel because I'm very direct, you know. And some people can feel unsafe in that situation. They're like, oh God, this person's, no, I'm asking a question. And I want an answer because like, if you're working unsafely, you need to work safely, right? And just laying it out with people. Whereas like, people just beat around the bush. It's like, no, you need to use the proper safety equipment because every safety rule is written in blood. Something bad has happened somewhere. That's why we have these rules. There's a poor woman who worked for a company who deep fried herself because she was using an ice cream scoop with the deep fryer. And the way it happened is just bonkers. She was pushing a tortilla down to make a tortilla bowl. We deep fry it, but she didn't find the actual basket to use to make it because she was in a hurry. Oh, so she used a metal ice cream scoop. Now, a metal ice cream scoop has a void in the handle, which is full of air, or sometimes it's full of Freon, which transfers the heat. She's pushing the ice cream scoop down. Ice cream scoop gets hot. She lets it go. It falls in the oil. Boom. Dumps 400 degrees Fahrenheit oil all over, flash fries her from the body up, you know, and these every safety rule is written in blood. But I think we also need to take a step back and listen. And sometimes people won't take her advice. And sometimes people will go a different way because what they want is different than what we want. Like what the way we do things is different than what they do. Some people, especially in the writing community, they want to write a story a certain way because they have a certain experience and a certain thing they want. And you can go, hey, I don't think this is going to get what you want, but you've got, but you know, you let them know once, you let them know your feedback and your thought process, and then you let it go. And don't take it personally if they don't follow your advice, because they're adults.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. You can't, don't borrow worry and trouble from something that you're not getting paid for.
Offering advice is often more about ourselves than about the other person.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I, that being said, like, if people are asking for advice, they're often not really asking for advice. They're asking for ideas that they can bounce their own ideas off of.
Like, they want to hear their own opinion in a deeper voice, in my case.
Yeah. 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 like they need validation or something like that. Right.
And I think often when we give advice, it's because we are falling into that most human trap of wanting to change our own past.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good. Ooh, that's good. That's a good one. I think that's going to be the poll quote for this episode. Speaking of which, we're like way over the length of this episode already, and I haven't even gotten to the second question. So here we go.
I'm just having fun. I think it's cool we got to talk about coaching because there's so much interesting stuff. Like there's different methods, there's different things you can do to make your life easier. Like with me with ADHD, like, you know, reading that book, Getting Things Done by David Allen, gave me tools to actually get my projects done, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why I was able to start writing more.
Yeah. Like for me, it was medication.
Yeah. Same.
I feel amazing.
I have so much less stress because I'm actually doing the things I'm supposed to do, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, oh, right. I'm not freaking out because I didn't get anything done on my day off.
And starting stuff doesn't take like this huge amount of energy.
Yeah. The clutch isn't slipping, you know?
Yeah. You just do it. The first time I took Ritalin, it was like, A friend's birthday, and usually when you have ADHD, like ADHD isn't really about not being able to focus. It's about not being able to start. It's a dopamine deficiency.
Yeah, my clutch does not engage. It's like if you're driving a manual car, you just can't, you know, take out the clutch. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
And like the distractedness is just your brain frantically trying to get the dopamine up, like by finding something that's interesting. But so the first time I took Ritalin, there was a friend's birthday and I wanted to bake a cake, and I took Ritalin and I was like, I want to bake a cake now. I have apples, I have sugar, I have flour, I have water, and I just did it. And
that was like an apple cake.
I love apple pie, apple cake, whatever.
Well, apple pie or apple cake? Because there's the German apple cake. Okay, yeah.
The one like the little like streusel on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I made that. So the point is, I just went and did it. And as I was pushing the thing in the oven, I was like, holy shit. And people without ADHD will be like, yeah, so what? I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, usually I would have to like spend 2 hours planning this thing.
Yeah. Like,
this is, yeah.
The executive dysfunction that comes with ADHD of having to find the proper time to do things.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be inspired to do this at 2 o'clock. Oh, it's 2:05. I can't do it until 3. You know, that thing of having the proper time for things instead of just doing it is crazy. Like, that is okay. Second question. All right. You had said there was a second question. I'm getting this back on track.
I think we kind of glossed over that one already. So I'm also not quite sure how much time we've actually spent because we had
best advice I ever got on writing? Was that one?
Yeah. So I think it's like 1 hour and a half we already in which is...
yeah. If you want to know the best advice I ever got about writing, it's about writing to market really quick. It's just this.
Good.
I read an article that said, writing to market is like serving people food you think they'll like.
Ooh, nice.
You're not selling out. No, you're setting a menu and from the things you like and then serving them something they like in a way you like. That is what it is. And that keeps you grounded. It keeps you within the fences, right? You know, I'm here and I'm going to not go off on this weird ass tangent because I know they won't like it. You know, I'm writing a happy story. We're not going to kill kids. You know, and that's something I see up with writers too.
Offensive because it would be outside of anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, puns. I like the idea of the concept. I've talked about this a couple times before, I think, but where, like I said, like if you're writing a happy story, for example, if Magic Murder Cube Marine is like old people kicking ass with magic and guns. Right, then that's the concept, and then maybe like there's like a lesson to be learned there. I don't quite know yet.
Right? Oh, it's not old people. It's a dude who's 36. But
that's old.
Yeah,
older than me.
Yeah.
Okay, no, but like, right. So if there's a lesson to be learned, like that's also there. Like for example, in Torchbearer, it's finding out who you are to actually let go of the emotions that shackle you, right? It's about making decisions. I made a mistake because I pushed too much other shit into that and I had to trim that all out because it didn't make any sense. I had like everything has to come back to the main question. And if you're writing to market, that is basically just that, and then making sure that the main concept that you want to do is something that more people than just you will enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then sticking to it.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Sure. I think it's all writing to market is so much easier because you have it's so much easier to get traction. It's so much people go, I understand what something is. If you will understand what something is, they can get it. Like if you saw a weird box in the grocery store as a pancake mix, you go, okay, it's pancake mix. But if it's something weird that says, you know, something you don't understand with some different language, like, what is this thing? Like you're not going to bring it home and eat it.
Like I said, I'm writing Torchbearer is not economical at all, but I will get there, goddammit. maybe I'll rewrite it fourth time.
You've got the rest of your life. Yeah. It can be one of those things where you're just chipping away at it forever. As long as you don't let it consume you.
Yeah. I personally want to finish, like, relaunch the book, see how it goes, right? But for Magic Murder Cube Marine, you're on a pretty good tangent, a pretty good, like, trajectory there. And I got a question here. We were talking about writing to market and so on and so forth, but I want to leave the question more open. Question number three would be... what's one thing that you learned and now would do differently or would like to change?
Oddly enough, that book was the accumulation of a lot of things learned. That was, I learned, do something nice for the reader that the reader is going to enjoy in the very first chapter. You know, I learned that. I learned, hey, you know, write in a genre on a platform that has an audience, wrote a lit RPG. really, I don't think I'd do anything different with that book. I would say have more of a backlog, because when mm-hmm. when I was launching it, I was writing chapters mm-hmm. and finishing them at 8 in the morning and posting them at 10, you know, like I have more of a backlog, but even I can't say, hey, that was bad, because I attracted the attention of a publisher mm-hmm. because of just the timing of it, mm-hmm. you know? And everything kind of came together. Mm-hmm. It all worked out. I don't think there's anything I would change about that one. I would change one thing. Initially, when I did the cover was a very kind of old school, looks like it could have been like something from the early 2000s or 90s. It's, mm-hmm. you know, the main character punching a dragon. He's wearing these mm-hmm. you know, pink booty shorts. And it was cool, but it wasn't eye-catching. So the newer I tried the different covers, because you should always try different covers to see what people like. That's the wonderful thing about Railroad. You can iterate. And mm-hmm. I found something more eye-catching, more showed what it was, showed readers what it was, instead of just being generic, right? Because a cover is a promise to a reader. A blurb is a promise to a reader. And I had the blurb right. I had the story right. I didn't have the marketing right. I didn't have the cover right. It didn't speak to the kind of people who would actually click and read it. So getting the cover right from the get-go, I would have love to have done. I didn't do that with Eden's Echo because I didn't learn my lesson yet. You know, I had this really cool, like, highbrow cover, and I was like, people aren't going to click that, are they?
Anime waifus.
Yeah, it's not just a cyberpunk woman with a rifle. It's great. You know, bright yellow. Yeah.
It's pretty good. I mean, yeah, cover design is something we could, like, touch on forever, too. All right, this is going in like a versicata mode here.
Go
next
for it.
Up,
lightning round.
Next up, round four.
Right. Show me your moves. Combat. Oh no!
Goddamn, you're making me forget all the questions.
Was it
the fourth question?
Yeah, one book that you loved, and why is it awesome?
Thank you.
I love a lot of books for different two different books from two different genres. I love anything Terry Pratchett, specifically Guards, because as someone who did not have a formal education, that taught me what writing could do. And because it has a very important lesson in it. The main character talks about how people are bastard-coded bastards to the center, but his actions speak to nobility and being good. Mm-hmm. And there is a happy ending. So there is that mm-hmm. dissonance between the noir of what the guy is saying about people being bastards. And then there is the actual thing below it of someone doing the right thing and succeeding and being incorruptible and rising above their problems. You can mm-hmm. say the world is a terrible place and the person can believe that the world is a terrible place, but what you show in the story can teach people a very different lesson. You know, it's Sam Vimes, it's Guards from Terry Pratchett. It's a wonderful book, and it's zany, and you've got a dragon, you know, and you've got a little, you know, swamp dragon who is a total, as they say, a total whittle. You know, he's just like the genetic, like he's like the random show dog that has like all the defects, like, you know, right? But he's a little baby dragon. He's fun, but it's playful. It does the thing. The characters are solid. They are who they are, and it's entertaining, and it has that thing of the person believes that the world is a horrible place, but their actions are noble. It's amazing. For science fiction, ooh, that's like, it's like choosing your kids, man. One of my favorite science fiction.
Everyone does this.
Would be,
I say one book, and people go like 15. Here's like 15.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
right. Go ahead.
You know, okay, so that's, you know, for my comedy. For fantasy, it'd probably be any of the Ellie Modisite's Magic Reckless series, because that has the idea of order versus chaos, of a very grounded mm-hmm. magic system that is grounded in physics mm-hmm. in a fantasy setting. Technically, mm-hmm. it's isekai. Some of it is, but like that shows like the dynamics and the people are people. And then for just straight up sci-fi, Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon will always be fantastic. So good. The way he incorporates language, like you know, the Spanish in there, like, because a lot of times writers have a monoculture in their books. It's the world planet of hats, and they don't have multiple languages. Like the way there's a little thing, the joke in there is cabrón modificado, which means altered asshole in Spanish. But instead of carbon, you know.
You know. Oh, nice.
Yeah, right. It's a bilingual pun. And you and the way it's written is you get it or you don't, right?
Yeah.
It's not a pothole for you to fall into if you don't get it. It's like, why am I, what am I missing out? It's a little thing you can get it or you don't. I love that writing.
Just like in Dungeon Call of Carl, where if you speak Spanish, the first book is like 500,000% more devastating.
I've never read it. I didn't know that was a thing until people started bringing it up.
Yeah, you should.
If it's on my list. Good day, it's on my TBR.
Yeah, if you're having a good day, you should read it if you want to have a bad day after. Like, no, it's not a bad book. Like, don't get me wrong.
Oh, no,
it's an amazing book, but it will also tear you down emotionally.
I keep getting told that, like, because I wrote Magic Mercury Moon, like, people are like, oh, yeah, like, your book is what I thought Dungeon Crawler Carl was going to be based off its cover. Okay. Makes sense. Like, it's just that zany, crazy thing. It's a, you know, it's a marine.
Yeah.
You know, a fantasy world doing crazy stuff.
DCC is very much like that. It's also very, very, very zany. But there is, I mean, it's a Matt Thinneman book. Mm-hmm. There's going to be external forces doing completely atrocious things to people.
Ooh.
And which in turn makes people do atrocious things to each other. And it is Matt has found this way where it's kind of like the BoJack Horseman of
RPGs.
Because like BoJack Horseman is like BoJack is like we are like we're just inheriting trauma from our parents, and then the viewer's like, haha, it's a funny horse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's and a like, dissonance.
Exactly. And then, like, Dungeon Crawler Carl is the exact same thing. You have people being forced to kill other people. You have parents have to kill their children, or like see them getting dismembered.
See, I never would have expected that from the cover.
Yeah, me neither. And I went and I read it all because here's the thing: it also has funny cats.
I've gotten like one chapter in and then I get distracted. And I also figured I should probably finish my own book before I read that book. That way we don't have to like do too much crossover. The reason that
get the audiobook.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying this that way there's not so much crossover, you know, that way we're not people stealing each other's laundry. I go, hey, I haven't read this book
yet. Oh, yeah.
You know, like the funny thing is they both have, you know, the dude in like the pink shorts on the cover. The reason I have the guy in pink shorts on the cover is because it's to weed out all the homophobes. Because I have gay characters in the book. Main character is the manliest man ever. But there are characters from different backgrounds and they exist because it's a world. There's people that exist. And like that is there's a reason why there's a unicorn on the cover and a dude in pink shorts. It's to basically act as a little gate to keep the people out who are not going to enjoy the story. The story is not for them. Because
G-A-Y-T?
Yep. No. G-A-T-E. I don't actually know what that is.
It's
I'm gonna make you explain
on,
that.
It's a pun on, because it's just a pun.
I have no context for this thing. I've heard like something like just annoying.
That's your problem.
Yeah. It's a gate. It's a filter. You know, it keeps you know people out who are not going to enjoy the thing because a lot of people want to get every single person in a book clicking it, but they don't realize that person's never going to follow. They're not going to enjoy it. They're not going to rate well.
Being polarizing is good to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, because you, but also it's a promise to the reader. You let them know what to expect, and a lot of people maybe wouldn't click that book if it didn't have the unicorn on it because they think it's going to be some sort of toxic masculine, you know, soup.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Meat soup.
Stew.
Stew.
All right.
Man, we should totally call like a character Stew. Anyway,
I have stew theory in the books. It's like string theory, but it's like, you know, it's been simmering for longer.
Nice.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Shout outs.
Oh, shout outs. Yeah. Am I calling things out, people out?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually. So I not everyone knows this. I'm actually, I have signed with Shadow Alley Press for Magic Murder Cube Marine. It's my first deal with publisher. I'm very excited. So we're writing that out, getting that thing's done. They do actually have Blood Shaper 4 coming out May 21st and Apocalypse Redux. Number 6 on June 18th, which is, you know, one of the more popular RPGs. I didn't know who anyone was. I went, oh, you. Okay, you're that. Okay, cool. Because I don't know anyone. I knew you because I'd seen your podcast stuff, but I was like, so I was very surprised when someone pinged me in the chat. It was like, hey, you know, the Crit RPG guy knows who you are. I'm like, oh, okay. So I think it was like 6 a.m. that one time. Yeah. And I just fallen asleep a few hours before because I was crazy up writing stuff. I would not have been coherent. And other shout outs. Yeah. I would say my friend Yarrow's stuff, Surviving Arcadia, because it is really well done. If you like survival lit RPG, which then goes into like a greater story, that's amazing. And of course, Sean Wilson, man. Old folks.
Yeah.
Love that guy. He's got his second book on Kindle Unlimited for Ultimate Level 1. I read that thing. I would say I read it religiously, but I don't read it every Sunday. I read it every day if there's an update. Like, I start my morning with that thing. Like, I have, like, oh, I roll out of bed, pour out my coffee. I'm like, oh, chapter one is another chapter here. Ooh, nice. What is the main character up to? Like, I love those books. Oh, my God. Ghost in the City.
I still don't know if I'm going to forgive him for calling the main, like naming the main character after a good friend of ours and myself, and then almost making me piss myself in the first chapter, like Sean. But yeah, it's gone. More shoutouts.
So good. Oh yeah. I want to send a lot of love to the person who writes Ghost in the City. You know, that cyberpunk self insert. I love their work. I love that story. That story is so good. And I love the way, like, the musical interludes, how, like, the character kind of gets dragged into, like, performing on stage. I love that. Like, let me just go on my follow list and see who just, you know, deserves, gets a little love.
You know? And I wish I had the time to read as much as you do.
I mean, it's not about having the time, because what you do is you just, you know, become a hermit, you know, and don't go out and don't do other things. Yeah.
Ooh. No, but I already do that.
Yeah, you know, okay, ooh, there's a new chapter of Ultimate Level 1 out. I'm going to have to read that. Yeah, Ghost in the City, love that freaking thing. Oh, yes, I just remembered, ADHD kicking in. The audio for I Ran Away to Evil, book one, just launched on the 23rd. Yeah. I pre-ordered, and I haven't had a chance to actually listen to that. So when I go to the gym, I'm going to start. Because I think it's Laura Horowitz narrating, and I follow her on
Jonathan
Instagram.
McClane.
Yeah, and I follow her on Instagram, and I was like, oh, they're talking about, you know, Mystic Neptune's book. Like, nice. You know, like, because I pre-ordered that way back when, because it was like a little birthday gift to myself. I'm so excited by that. But no, there's so many cool people on Royal Road who are just, like, good people. And they're figuring things out and they're doing things. Like, you know, the guy who does, I'm actually going to start doing merch on Lit RPG Forge. And the guy who writes.
Josh.
Yeah, Josh. Yeah, Son of Flame.
Josh is a friend of ours.
Firefighter. Yeah. Such a good person. And there's so many great people in here. I mean, JP Wrights, you know, the guy who does Dungeon Studies, just, you know, released that new thing, which is great. Let's see what else is fun in here. Who's just, I know.
We'll need to type all of those out, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So the more you add, the more I will have to, like, actually type out all, like, Google them, type them. Just saying.
You know, I gotta call out, you know, someone who's amazing. Seersucker. That, oh my God, like the Downtown Druid.
Yeah.
So freaking good. Because I love Canamon.
I've asked him, I really want him on the podcast, but he has kids and he's like, I can't. Like, okay.
Super, super cool dude. And I just love, like, because it's so great. Because, like, if you get the reference, you get it. If you don't, you don't. But it doesn't hang you by it, you know?
The Monte Cristo one?
Downtown Druid, because, like, the character's named, like, Dantes. And you know what? I want to shout out somebody who probably doesn't get enough credit, who is amazing, and I probably wouldn't be here on Royal Road without Don Chapman. Because Don is, like, helpful, and Don was going through a rough time, and they were still helping someone who is so new to the space when, you know, I was someone who nobody knew who I was. So some people, like, were very much like, why are you writing a romance on Royal Road? It will never do well. And now it's in, like, the top 20 best rated of all time. It's like number 2 or 3 in romance. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's people love it and people enjoy it because it's this cozy, fun mm-hmm. thing. And a lot of people were very unpleasant about it because they came from a good place. They're like, hey, you're never going to succeed. You're never getting an audience because mm-hmm. romance mm-hmm. is generally going to fail. And 99 times out of 10, out of 100, they would have been right, you know, but mm-hmm. it's worked out. And that was someone who was just like, hey, yeah, if you're going to write the thing, do it. And gave me some resources that answered questions. And mm-hmm. I owe a lot to Don Chapman. I owe a lot to Mystic Neptune, who wrote I Ran Away to Evil, because these are people who are supportive and have helped me out, and I can help them out. And it's a fundamental human need to ask for help and help people. And, you know, that having that support in the community is amazing. Like Sean, old folks, that is a supportive person. That is someone who likes helping. And, you know, obviously, you know, draw the boundary and stuff like that. But if they can help, they'll help. And I like being that person, too. Like, hey, you know, J-Pal didn't ask me to give a shout out, but I'm like remembering, oh, great. They got that book out. I kind of caught an error in the blurb. I don't know if they fixed that yet. Because it's like, ooh, that's hopefully. It was in a little. Yeah, go for it.
All right. We need to end the main podcast because we are like 45 minutes over.
Okay.
Already.
I'm having so much fun with you, Max.
Yeah, like this. Like, don't get me wrong. This is pretty great. We will keep talking, but I desperately need to get some food into myself, or otherwise I'm going to get hangry.
Wait, you mean you can't just exist on one yogurt, 4 shots of espresso, and ADHD meds?
No.
All right. Me neither.
This has been a very meaty discussion. This has been a very meaty discussion. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having
everyone
me.
Else. We're going to keep talking, so go check out my Patreon if you want to. If you can't or don't want to, that's also fine. Just leave me a like, a follow, a comment, whatever you want. That would really help me out. And a combination of all three would be the best. Thank you very much.
And you owe it to yourself to check it out because you're always going to wonder what we're talking about. And we can talk about some things on Patreon. Maybe we can't talk in mainstream as much. We don't know. Who knows?
I think,
depends what you ask me.
I think I think I pretty much also interviewed pretty much everyone you shouted out.
Yeah.
So,
incestuous social circles, I think we call them.
Exactly.
Well, it's
all right. But that being said, thank you everyone for listening and/or watching.
And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, of course. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.